And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The new film Dark Waters explores a local attorney's 20-year battle against a titan of corporate America.
Your grandma tells me her grandson's some fancy environment lawyer down in Cincinnati.
I am a corporate defense attorney.
So?
I defend chemical companies.
Well, now you can defend me.
How many did you lose?
190.
190 calves.
You tell me, nothing's wrong here.
In the film, actor Mark Ruffalo portrays attorney Robert DeLotte, who works at Taft Law here in Cincinnati. DeLotte also has a new book out about the experience. He spoke with me earlier about the events that inspired a movie that is generating early Oscar buzz. And joining us now is Cincinnati attorney and author Robert DeLotte. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here because you've got a remarkable story that you've told in book form and a story that is very excitingly also being told in film form.
That's
and
right.
A movie that was shot here in Cincinnati, Dark Waters. So you've proven yourself to be a pretty formidable litigator based on the outcome of this complicated, complex, and lengthy case that you dealt with. But I'm wondering if you use those litigator skills at all to lobby Hollywood to land Mark Ruffalo to portray you in this film, Dark Waters?
No. Actually, there was an article that came out in January of 2016 in the New York Times Magazine that was really one of the first kind of comprehensive articles that summarized a lot of the history of what we'd been working on with this chemical PFOA for many years. And after that article came out, Mark Ruffalo saw it and was very interested in the story and reached out to me directly to see if that was something they could bring out in film form.
How does that work? Does Mark Ruffalo, the Hawk, does he just get on the phone and give you a call at your office?
We had a phone call. That's right. Yeah.
So how surprised were you when that call came in?
It was a little surprising, to say the least. But, you know, after a few minutes, I could tell, you know, he was incredibly passionate about this topic. He was really interested in water issues. He thought this was a great story that could really highlight some of the issues that we're all dealing with, not just with PFOA, but our entire chemical regulatory system. And just really was dedicated to doing this story and doing it the right way, and bringing it out in a way that really captured what really happened, and the people that were really involved and what kind of impact it had on the people who were not only involved in the story, but the community that was dealing with this as well.
Just to continue on the Hollywood aspect of this before we dive into the remarkable story that inspired all of this. When did the process towards cinematizing this story become real for you? When you saw the full cast list, or was it when, you know, the production showed up here in Cincinnati?
It was really when I saw folks actually arriving and when Mark Ruffalo and Anne Hathaway and the director and the screenwriter all came out and met with us at our house. I realized then this was actually happening, that this process was actually moving forward.
Robert DeLotte is a Cincinnati-based attorney, and he's also the author of a new book about this story, Exposure. It's the same story that is being told in the new film, Dark Waters. And it's such an incredible story. And before we dive into some questions about it, I'm hoping that you would read a little bit from the early part of the book to set the stage for what this client of yours was facing.
Sure. In this particular section, we're talking about Wilbur Earl Tennant. And what he was dealing with at the time he called me in 1998. So I'll read one of the early sections here in the book. The calf was engulfed in a black humming mist. He zoomed in, flies. He panned again, a bonfire on a grassy slope, a pyre of logs as fat as garbage cans. In the flames, a calf lay broadside, burning. Black smoke curled into the daylight. This is the 107th calf that's met this problem right here. And I burn them all. There's been 56 cows that's been burnt just like this. In another field, a grown calf lay dead. Her white hide was crusted with diarrhea, and her hip bones tinted her hide. Her eyes were sunk deep in her head. "This cow died about 20-30 minutes ago," Earl said. "I fed her at least a gallon of grain a day. She had a calf over there, calf born dead." Earl loved his cows, and the cows loved Earl. They would nuzzle him as he scratched their heads. In the spring, he would run and catch the calves so his daughters could pet them. Even though he sold them to be finished and slaughtered for beef, he didn't have the heart to kill one himself, unless it had a broken leg and he needed to end its suffering. Recently, the cows had started charging, trying to kick him and butt him with his heads, as this one had done before she died. She had spent the summer in the hollow, drinking at a dry run until she'd started to act strangely. With no one from the government or even local veterinarians willing to do it, Earl decided to do an autopsy himself. It wasn't his first. His earlier efforts had all revealed unpleasant surprises, tumors, abnormal organs, unnatural smells. He wasn't an expert, but the disease seemed clear enough that he bagged the physical evidence and left it in his freezer for the day he could get someone with credentials interested enough to take a look. That day had never come, so he decided he'd make them watch a video. "She's poor as a whippoorwill, and I'm going to cut her open and find out what caused her to die, because I was feeding her enough feed that she should have gained weight instead of losing weight. The first thing I'm going to do is cut this head open. Check these teeth." Earl pulled on white gloves and pried the cow's mouth, probing her gums and teeth. The tongue looked normal, but some of the teeth were coal black, interspersed with white ones like piano keys. One tooth had an abscess so large he reckoned he could stick an ice pick clear under it. The flies hummed as loud as bees. He sliced open the chest cavity, pulled out a lung, and turned the camera back on. The smell was odd. He couldn't quite place it. It was different from the regular dead cow smells he had dealt with all his life. "I don't understand them great big dark red places right there. Don't understand that at all. I don't ever remember seeing that in there before." He cut out the heart and sliced it open. The muscle looked fine, but a thin yellow liquid gathered in the cavity where it once beat. "There's about a teacup or so full of it. It's a real dark yeller. It's something I've never run into before." He reached back into the cow and pulled out a liver that looked about right. Attached to it was a gallbladder that didn't. "That's the biggest gall I ever saw in my life. Something's the matter right there. That's things about it. Oh, two-thirds bigger than it should be." The kidneys, too, looked abnormal. Where they should have been smooth, they looked ropey, covered with ridges. The spleen was thinner and wider than any spleen he'd ever come across. Then he cut open the outer lung. He noted dark purple splotches where there should have been fluffy and pink. "You notice them dark places there, all down through, even down the tips of it? That's very unusual. That looks a little bit like cancer to me." Whatever had killed this cow appeared to Earl to have eaten her from the inside out.
So Earl Tennant, a farmer in West Virginia, was recording this with the video camera. And this was 1998.
Yeah. In fact, some of this was actually recorded a few years earlier. I think he started recording what he was seeing there around 1996.
Because he was convinced that something was happening. Something unusual was going
right
on, and he could not get any help.
That's right.
And then your phone rings in 1998. And at this point, you're a 33-year-old lawyer. Here in town, you pick up the phone, and on the other end of the line is Wilbur Earl Tennant. What happened?
Yeah, I was a little surprised, to say the least. He immediately started rattling off about dead cows on this property, and I had no idea who he was or what he was talking about. I'd never spoken to the man before. Wasn't even quite sure how he got my number and how it rang through. And I was about to hang up the phone when he mentioned, "Got your name from your grandmother, Alma White." And that caught my attention. My grandmother and my mom had all grown up and lived in Parkersburg, West Virginia. And apparently, Mr. Tennant had been talking to one of his neighbors who knew my grandmother. And it just so happened, he was complaining how he couldn't get anybody locally to talk to him. And the neighbor said, I just talked to Alma White, and her son's a big lawyer up in Cincinnati. He does environmental. He can help you. So when I heard that story and heard that this was coming from my grandmother, I decided to listen and invited him up to bring whatever he had to show us so we could figure out what was going on.
And what did he think the problem was?
He was convinced he knew what the problem was. He was, his cows were drinking from a creek that ran through his property, and at one end of the creek there was a landfill owned by the DuPont Company. And a couple years earlier, in the mid to late 90s, he had started seeing white foaming suds coming out of the landfill into his creek. And after that started, his cows, which would not only drink from the creek but stand in the creek and cool off there in the summertime, started developing tumors. Their teeth started turning black. The cows, even though he was feeding them, as he always did, started wasting away and dropping dead. And then calves were born with blind or stillborn. And it wasn't just the cows. He noticed it impacting all the wildlife in the area. Deer were dying. Fish were dying in the creek, the birds. So he was convinced there was something in that white foam coming out of that DuPont landfill, but he couldn't get anybody to listen to him.
And when you say DuPont, you know, that resonates so much because they're one of America's legacy companies. That's one of America's great names, DuPont. And Earl Tennant says that he can't get tests on the foamy water because the state and federal regulators are afraid.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about a company, as you indicated, that's been around for a long time, dating back to the Revolutionary War. And they owned and operated one of their largest manufacturing plants right there in Parkersburg, called the Washington Works, right along the Ohio River. They were one of the biggest employers in town. And most of the people in that community either worked for the company or knew somebody that did, or new friends that worked there. It was basically a company town. And so to start complaining about thinking that DuPont was contaminating the property or possibly was injuring the cows, most of the folks that Mr. Tennant talked to didn't want to get involved, including even the state regulators. In West Virginia, we ended up finding out through discovery years later that there was a bit of a revolving door between the folks at the DuPont plant and the people who ended up being the regulators in the state of West Virginia.
They would have connections to both the state government and the company.
Right.
When you heard DuPont and that this, you know, may be the adversary in a case that you were going to take on, were you afraid of DuPont?
No. You know, I had been working with folks in the chemical industry for years. Our firm, at Taft at the time, we had a very active practice in Superfund cleanup sites all over the country where a lot of our clients and other companies were being asked to figure out how to pay for or figure out how to do cleanups of these Superfund sites. So at a lot of those locations and over the years, I had met with the folks representing DuPont. We had been at the same table trying to figure out which companies ought to pay what portion of cleanup costs. So I knew them. I knew the lawyers there. And I figured this was something that they would want to get to the bottom of as well.
Robert Belot is an author and attorney. His new book is called Exposure. It's also the same story as explored in the film Dark Waters. The New York Times said of your book, quote, if Belot makes for an unlikely warrior in the battle for safe drinking water, DuPont plays to type as the faceless behemoth that seems to care more about its bottom line than the health of its employees or the tens of thousands of people who live near the giant plant it operates outside of Parkersburg, West Virginia. You're characterized a lot as a David and Goliath story. I've even heard that the film is kind of compared to Aaron Brockovich, which people remember, sort of a similar situation with a single person launching this case against a large corporation. When you were writing the book and you finished the book and you sat it down complete, what did you think of yourself as a writer?
You know, it was not easy. you know, as a lawyer, you're often trained to write a certain way. You are trained to write in very short, direct, choppy sentences that, you know, get right to the point. No adjectives, no adverbs. Everything is just fact, fact, fact. So it, you know, it was unusual process for me to work on that.
I've marked another section in the book for you. If you wouldn't mind just reading a short section there that I've highlighted out of chapter 3, which talks about Parkersburg. Please proceed.
Sure. 8 months after Earl's visit, I put on my Meet the Client suit and slid behind the wheel of my little Celica for a drive to West Virginia. I wanted an up-close look at the physical environment, hoping it would yield some obvious clue that would lead me to the source of the problems. So far, I hadn't found much. After I'd spent all those months on the case, that was a damning admission. I'd been sending Freedom of Information Act requests to all the relevant agencies, poring through the thousands of records we had received in response relating to the permitting and operation of the landfill, all as I continued to work on Superfund cases with Tom and regulatory work with Kim. As required, DuPont had been sending the government regular reports on tests on the landfill water outflow, but the report showed nothing that seemed to explain what Earl was seeing in his cows. I'd go to our environmental library, a grandiose label for a closet-sized room on the 20th floor filled with environmental reference books, and browse through the volumes on various chemicals, looking for any that might cause the foam Earl had found in Dry Run Creek. I wasn't finding any matches. In all the work I'd done for the firm, I'd always been able to dig and find the needle in the haystack, which was why Tom and Kim had given me sufficiently positive reviews to justify naming me as a partner, even if I'd brought in none of my own clients yet. For the first time, and with the first client I'd brought to the firm, no needles were appearing. So I dug harder, adding hours to my already long days. I usually came in around 8:30, 6 days a week, and stayed at least until 6 or 6:30. Now I was staying until 10 or 11. As the days went by, Earl called several times a week, wanting to know what I'd found and how much I'd figured out. I could sense his growing frustration when the answer was always the same, that I was still hunting through documents. "Let's wait and see what the rest of the government records say," I'd tell him. This hardly satisfied him. For years now, he'd been dealing with those people, the state, EPA, and most of all, DuPont, and he didn't trust a word out of their mouths. I understood how he felt, but I relied on the science. Samples would be taken, tests run, and any problems would be revealed. The calls all ended the same way. Earl would hang up, clearly unhappy, both with the progress of the case and with me, personally. I had never had an unhappy client before, and it weighed on me.
That's author and attorney Robert Ballot reading from his new book, Exposure, which explores a 20-year legal battle against the DuPont company. I'm wondering how, at that point in your career, it weighed on you, as you referenced there, because Earl Tennant was looking for somebody to just listen to him, and you did, and you came in to fight on his behalf and at least go through the process, but he didn't seem so happy. Talk about the weight that you felt from that reaction.
Yeah, when we first agreed to take on the case, I thought this would be a fairly straightforward project. You know, here we had a regulated landfill that operated under permits from the state or the federal agencies. And so I thought I would be able to do what I had done with our corporate clients, pull the permits, find out what was regulated, see if the sample results of the water showed that something was above the permit limit that would explain the problems. But as we dug further and further, I wasn't finding any of that. And it was really difficult for me because usually I'd always been able to find those kind of answers. But in this case, we just weren't seeing anything. We would pull the permits and look at all the list of regulated chemicals and look at the sample results from the water, and nothing was jumping out as being too high, and that would explain what we were seeing in those animals. So it was incredibly frustrating because, you know, we had a client that had come to us, you know, assuming we could get to the bottom of this for them, and a lot of time was going by, and I was finding nothing.
Did you ever have trouble keeping faith in yourself?
You know, I always just assumed I just need to look at more information. If I can just find something else, I can get to the bottom of this. And, you know, that's what finally led us to start realizing, you know, maybe we need to ask for a little more here. The company had been giving us documents about what was hazardous at the landfill. And I figured, you know, let's just ask for everything. Let's try to find out exactly what all went to that landfill, regulated under the permit or not, and what are they making at that plant down the road that is sending the waste here? I thought that was a rather straightforward request. You know, we'd ask for that information, and that might help find something that maybe wasn't referenced in a permit. And that's when we got huge pushback from the company.
So I don't want to give too much away for people who may not be familiar with this story, because your book is new and the film comes out very soon for people to be able to see it. So I don't want to kill any of the suspense of this intriguing decades-long battle, but I know there were ups and downs throughout the case. What was it that kept you going outside of any type of legal monetary settlement? What was it that drove you?
The clients, you know, we were working with some incredible people, that were incredibly passionate and convinced, you know, that there was an issue here and that we needed to let other folks know about it. And when I finally started digging in and finally realized what was going on, you know, I was convinced as well that if I can just get other people to see what's happening here, they'll understand too. You know, it's as when Mr. Tennant came to us the first day and said, if you could just look at what I have, you'll get it. You'll understand. You'll see what I'm seeing. And that's kind of how I've been operating the last 20 years, thinking that if I can just put all this information together, get it out there, for example, through the book and through the movie that's going to be coming out, I'm hoping people will finally see this is what actually happened. You know, that and they will finally understand this is a problem that needs to be dealt with.
We're talking with Robert Ballant. He's a local attorney, and his new book is called Exposure. And then there's the film coming out based on the story as well. It's called Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo as our guest, Robert Ballant. DuPont says the new film does not accurately reflect the facts and that legal experts are looking at possible litigation against the producers of Dark Waters. What do you think of their case there?
You know, I've seen that posting and the website. You know, this is the same kind of thing I've been hearing for 20 years, the same kind of misinformation and spinning of the facts that we've been dealing with for quite some time through the PR machine on the other side. You know, I think folks can look at the facts in the book. They can look at the story that's portrayed in the film, and they can form their own opinions to realize this did happen. These facts are true in the book. You know, this is something that really happened here. We do know now about these chemicals. We have more than enough information now. I think what was telling is, you know, there's no reference to any specific facts that are allegedly are incorrect or wrong.
The movie is called Dark Waters. It was filmed here in the Cincinnati area, and now it's ready to be released. You've seen it. Did you like the film?
Yeah, I thought they did a tremendous job. This was a great group of people, a terrific cast. You know, the people at Participant and Focus, you know, just did a tremendous job on taking a story that spans a number of years, involves a number of people. You know, it involves some complicated science, and they put it together in, I think, a fantastic way.
Robert Ballot is a Cincinnati-based attorney and the author of the new book, Exposure, Poison Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. It's the same story that you'll see profiled in the new film, Dark Waters, starring actor Mark Ruffalo as Robert Ballot. Robert Ballot, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we sought a response from DuPont, and the company issued a statement, which I will read in part here. Quote, although DuPont does not make the chemicals in question, we have announced a series of commitments around our limited use of PFAS and our leading industry in supporting federal legislation and science-based regulatory efforts to address these chemicals. DuPont goes on to say, quote, this includes eliminating the use of all PFAS-based firefighting foams from our facilities and granting royalty-free licenses to those seeking to use innovative PFAS remediation technologies. DuPont said in its statement to WVXU additionally, quote, DuPont is in the business of creating essential innovations the world needs today. Hollywood is in the business of telling stories. While seeking to thrill and entertain, these stories often stretch facts. Unfortunately, this movie claims to be inspired by real events and appears to grossly misrepresent things that happened years ago, including our history, our values, and science. DuPont goes on to say, quote, the film's previews depict wholly imagined events. Claims that our company tried to hide conclusive scientific findings are inaccurate. We have always and will continue to work with those in the scientific, not-for-profit, and policy communities who demonstrate a serious and sincere desire to improve our health, our communities, and our planet. That is a statement from DuPont to WVXU. You can read the full statement at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Meanwhile, Dark Waters will have a local premiere on Sunday, November 17. It's for the local cast and crew that worked on the film while it was in town. It has a limited national release on November 22nd before it finally arrives in Cincinnati theaters on November 27th. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Marks.